Okay. Are there questions about any of the previous material or course mechanics, anything like that, before we move to our topic? What I'm going to do is talk about how you count how many trees there are to get an idea of how big a problem you're dealing with. And forgive me if most of this lecture is, you know, kind of people having fun with combinatorics, which may not seem directly or biologically relevant. The answer is going to be a huge number of trees. But it's kind of interesting to see how they figure that out. They don't do it by saying, we write down a tree. Well, let's think of all the trees we can and write them down and then count them, because you can't know that you've got them all. And you might write some down, the same tree down twice without knowing. Which brings up this point here. I want you to stare at these two trees. And I want you, I don't know why this thing isn't working. I want you to consider, for our purposes, whether those are or are not the same tree. So I'll let you stare at it for a bit and try to. Has everybody got an opinion of one way or I'm going to take a vote. So if you're not ready to vote, murmur or something. All who think they are different trees. All who think they are the same tree. Okay, you got the right answer. That is the right answer. Now, the way, I mean, if you look at them, the order of species across the top is very different. But chimp is sister species to human. The sister species to both of those is gorilla. The sister species to those three is orang in both trees. Gibbon next is the sister species to those, then macaque, then colobus, and both, colobus is a South American monkey. Macaque is, of course, African or Asian. So those are the same tree, and what differs between them is that we flip some of the nodes left-right, but, you know, just to reemphasize, when you draw a tree and you come to a speciation event and the question is, well, which group is going to be on the left and which is going to be on the right? And the answer is there isn't any biological difference between those. You could do it either way. So you can flip at any interior node. And if you have a multifurcation of, you know, say four species coming out, four lineages, you can have those in any order. And those trees are all, for our purposes, supposed to be the same tree. It also means that you can, by rearranging at the top, for example, you can get cumin out to the right. Once when I drew such a tree, and I put, I did them in a sort of ladder-like order with a colobus to the left, and then macaque, and then gibbon, and then orang, and then gorilla, and that going left to right. And the last two were going to be chimp and human, and I happened to put them in the reverse order. Someone I know came up to me after this talk who had heard it and said, you got those in the wrong order. And I didn't want to get into a big fight, so I didn't resist. But no, they could go in either order. The fact that we're conventionally used to seeing it presented as a sort of triumphal march of evolution ending in us is just an artifact of which way you order things across the top. So you have to watch out for misleading impressions from that. Okay, so you get the idea. These are rooted, bifurcating trees. At each branch, there are two descendants. So actually, at each node in the interior of the tree, there are three things connecting, but you don't count the one. In a rooted tree, you don't. When you use the terminology bifurcating, you're not counting the ancestor. Okay. If I start writing down rooted, bifurcating trees, I can find one of them that has two tips. With three tips, I can find three of them. They differ according to which one comes off in the first split, if it's A or B or C. For four, I can find 15. They come in two different shapes. One of them has 12 trees, that where you have individual lineages splitting off and finally two tips, but also there are three of them that are a two-way split, each leading to two branches. Okay. Well, that's just me writing them down and saying, how many can I find? And that's not guaranteed to work. So the question comes up, how for this rooted bifurcating case can you make a count in a convincing way? And here what I'm going to do is use an argument that was put forward by, in a paper that was very pioneering, we'll get into the history later, Luca Cavalli-Sforza, who originally from Italy, is more recently at Stanford University, and Anthony Edwards. In 1967, the paper published, strangely enough, in two different journals. What happened is they gave the talk in a symposium, and they submitted it to Evolution. But the symposium was before human geneticists, and they then found out that their participation in the symposium required them to submit it to American Journal of Human Genetics, and there then proceeded to be a whole bunch of discussion, and they ended up getting permission to publish it there too, in addition to an Evolution. So the same paper is in both journals in that year. In that paper, they do a lot of important things, but one of them is to make this counting argument that I'm going to give you. It's not really the main point of the paper. And I should also say that the problem was already solved in the physics literature in German in 1870 by a guy named Ernst Schroeder. When I looked up that paper, I found you to go to the library and write out a request, and then they send a request off to their bomb-proof shelter somewhere, and they retrieve the 1870 journal from it. But they could, and they did. It's a Zeitschrift für Mathematik und Physik, which is the Journal of Mathematics and Physics in 1870. In 1870, the problem being solved was not how many evolutionary trees there were. They were thinking of other tree-like graphs. And questions like, how many ways can you put parentheses into a mathematical expression? And it turns out to be the same problem, really. But in the 1967 paper, Cavalli-Sforza and Edwards came up with this very nice way to rationalize a thing and then do the counting that didn't. And Schroeder had done it by generating function methods, which are very powerful but very hard to understand. Now, this is easy because they say, suppose we have the species, we just give them the letters of the alphabet. So when we have a two-species case, there'll be A and B. When we have a three-species case, there'll be A, B, and C. So we say, okay, we want to find all the three-species trees. Let's try adding C to all possible places in that two-species tree. And those places are the branches. And there are three branches here, the one leading to A, one leading to B, and the ancestral branch. And you can split off C from any of those three. You might say, well, what about splitting it off from the interior node? You could do that, but then you won't have a bifurcating tree. Then you'll have a multifurcating tree. We'll see ourselves doing that a little later when we get to multifurcating trees. But for now, you can only split from the branches. So there are three branches, so there are three ways to do that. Now, here you get to each of those trees. Now you want to add D. Where can you add it? On any of the branches. How many branches are there? There are two more than there used to be. And there are two more than there used to be because when you added C, let's say here, it added a branch leading to C, and it also split the branch leading to A into two. So it added two more branches. So there were three places to put C in each two-species tree. There are now 5 places to put it in a three-species tree. So what I'm going to show you, we have three of these. I'm going to take one of them and show you what happens when you add in all possible places. So here I have the dotted lines coming out from here, 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 and down here. And each arrow is then showing what it results in. It's a little tricky in that this arrow is actually corresponding to this one up here I just drew. I probably should redraw it so it goes under the other branch or something. But this one is for that, this one is for that. You can sort of see. Okay, when you do that, you get, there's five places you can add, you get five different trees. Likewise, with the left one and the right one, each of those gives rise to five different trees. So you would end up with 15 trees. And that was the number, I'll go back a page, that was the number I gave here, and I seem to be very confident that those are all possible trees. And it's really because of this argument that, but there's still, there's a couple things you have to establish to do this. One is to come up with all those trees and then confidently assert that the number of them is the number of trees. There's two things you have to know. One is you'd want to know that every bifurcating tree can be reached by one of these sequences of additions, by adding A, B, C in order in all possible places. So you'd want to know that any bifurcating tree that I gave you, you could go back and say, okay, if that corresponds to adding in this place. But then there has to be something else established, which is how do you know that these sequences of additions won't result in the same tree more than once? How do you know that each path is going to result in a different tree? So let me try to present that argument. If I take a tree and I say, okay, what sequence of additions led to that? Is there one? Well, what you can do is you go backwards up the alphabet. You rip off D. You say D was the most recently added. So the last step was adding D on this A lineage. Now you have C, A, B. You rip off C and you say, well, that was down below. So that corresponds to adding there. So any tree I give you, you just take the tips in reverse alphabetical order, if you're imagining adding them in alphabetical order, and you can work out the sequence of additions that led to it. Yeah?
Question, are we considering the root? Like if we reroute the tree, would that make some of them?
These are rooted bifurcating trees, which means we're requiring they have a meaningful root. So messing about with the root gets us into a different problem. It gets us into the problem of counting unrooted trees, which I'm going to show you how to do once we, you know, this will lead us on to a way of counting unrooted trees. Mm-hmm. Okay, so any tree I give you, there is a sequence of additions that you can come up with just by ripping off the species one at a time. Well, could there have been, so that means that among all these 15 trees, every rooted bifurcating tree must be there at least once. How do we know it isn't more than once? Well, I'm going to argue that I present you with a rooted bifurcating tree, you will come up with a sequence of additions, but you'll only come up with one. There isn't another sequence of addition. I mean, there is if we take the tips and rip them off in a different order, but we're not allowing ourselves to do that. We're ripping them off in reverse alphabetic order. So I'm going to argue, and please fight with me about this if this isn't totally convincing, that there is one sequence of additions for each tree. So that argues then that these 15 are all different, because there is no one of them that's in two places and thus has two sequences of addition that lead to it. Therefore, this will lead to all trees each exactly once, all rooted bifurcated trees. Okay. Now, how many trees are there in general? Well, there are three ways to add up here. For each of those, there's five ways. The next step is 7, because there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, because, again, each addition makes two new branches. So it's the product of the integers. But not the integer, the odd, sorry, the odd integers. In a go, they start with one for a single tip. There's, for two tips, there is one tree. There's three trees for three tips. There's five times that many for four tips, and so on. And it turns out that they go up until you get to 2n minus 3. Now, the diagram I just showed you, 2n minus 3, we got up to 4, we got up to 5 tips. 2n minus 3, that's 2 times 10 minus 3 is 7. No, I'm sorry. We got up to 4 tips, that's it. 2 times 4 is 8 minus 3 is 5. So the last multiplying number we multiplied by was 5. Okay, so that works. So it's the product of odd integers up to 2n minus 3. That's the answer. That's the answer that Ernst Schroeder got in 1870. And that's the answer that Cavalli, Schwartz, and Edwards got by this argument in 1967. Please.
So is n the number of tips?
Number of tips, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Number of tips.
Thank you.
Okay. How big are those numbers? Let's look at them. There they are. There's one tree for one tip. There's one tree for two tips. Then 3 times 5 is 15. Times 7 is 105 for 5 tips. Times 9 is 945. Times 11 is 10,395. And you see already, with 7 tips, we're getting up to an area where writing them all down and then counting them isn't going to work. You're going to lose patience with that. 135,000, 2 million, and at 10 tips, 34,459,425. That's a lot. Okay, you keep going. When you get up to, now here are the numbers exactly down to 20. This is 8.2 times 10 to the 21st. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in these groups of 3. So 1 times 10 to the 21st will be a 1 followed by 21 zeros. This is 8.2 times that. That's a big number. Here we go to 30. We get to 4.9518 to times 10 to the 38. 40, 10 to the 57. 50, 10 to the 76. Okay. Estimates, probably old and invalid estimates, say that the number of electrons in the observable universe is in the order of 10 to the 80th. That's an old figure and probably not accurate. Anyway, it's astronomical in size. If you tried to write down each of those trees once, there isn't enough atoms in the universe to write them all down, basically. Now, you may say, well, okay, it's fun to see these numbers. The point is they're very big. And the point is that what they tell you is any method that says get a computer, generate all possible trees, evaluate something on each one, and then find the one which is, keep track of the one which is best. Any such method is that if you've got 16 tips, is not going to be doable in the time that you have. So exhaustive enumeration methods only will work when you're down in this territory here, and then they just lose all possibility of doing them. I should say that I published a paper on dealing with some slightly more complicated methods by Cavalli, Schwartz, and Edwards type methods in 1978. When I sent it in for review was when a very good reviewer who knew the enumeration literature and pointed me to Schroeder's paper, which was useful to know that I'd been scooped by 108 years. But at one point in that paper, my algorithm for computing these things did something by single precision, which it should have done by double precision, and I printed some tables of numbers that looked like this. And the last, 14 digits were wrong. So I had to write an erratum. But the first ones, were okay. And I wrote an erratum with tongue-in-cheek, saying that this was wrong. Here's what the table actually looks like when you compute it. I recomputed it. And my apologies to anyone whose research has been impeded by having these wrong numbers. And that's, you know, I doubt there was anybody who cared. I also wrote in the abstract for my paper that one of the purposes of having this table are a couple-fold. One is just to see that they're big. The other is to, if you're writing a program to enumerate all possible trees, you want to know if it's correct. So you want to see if it gets, when it finishes enumerating them all, if it's counted the right number of them, and then you can check against this table. That's useful. The other way I said it was to frighten taxonomists. So, because if anybody who thought that they could just write down all trees, you put this down and they go, oh my God, you know, we can't do that. But other than that, it's fun and games. Let me see, talk about unrooted trees. If I take a rooted bifurcating tree, if I take an unrooted tree, there's an unrooted bifurcating tree. It's a little funny for terminology because each branch is connected to three things, not two things. But one of them, we don't know which one, is the ancestral lineage. And so that results in you calling this split here a bifurcation. Well, if you take one of the species, let's say the alphabetically first one, designate it any way you want, and you sort of take this tree and you reach over here and you grab it and you shake it, you sort of flip it and plant it in the ground, okay, planting that species in the ground, you get a bifurcating tree, a rooted bifurcating tree, which has one fewer species on it, because this is no longer a species now, it's just the root of, it's the root of the tree. By the way, there's a slight ambiguity in the word, the root of the tree. Sometimes people mean this, and sometimes they mean the lowest fork. You have to be aware in each case. Okay, so what that suggests is the number of rooted bifurcating trees with one fewer tip is the number of unrooted trees with, in this case, eight. So the number of seven-tip rooted trees is the number of eight-tip unrooted trees. So if we look at those, let's see. If we want to count them, I haven't got a separate table. It's this table again. But what you do is drop these numbers, increase these numbers by one. So for this 34 million figure, that's the number of 11-tip unrooted trees. It's the number of 10-tip rooted trees or the number of 11-tip unrooted trees. So you get the unrooted case for free, basically, by that argument. Okay, so you go on and say, let's do a more complicated case. Yeah, that's a good moment to drag me back. Yeah.
I'm actually a little confused about
yeah.
So if we have just three species and a rooted tree, there's three potential trees. Unrooted, there's only one.
Yes, unrooted with three.
There's only one.
But unrooted with three will be the same as rooted with two.
Right.
Because the two, I mean, that I think is straightforward because it says here's a three-tip unrooted tree, A, B, C. Here is, I'll put C in parentheses, the rooted tree corresponds to it. One of those tips is no longer counted as a tip.
Where I'm getting lost is with the rooted tree.
Yeah.
I understand. Well, you either have A and B sort of closer together, and then C joins in. Or A and C, and then B joins in.
Right.
Or B and C, and then A joins
so
in.
So there's three. There are three trees that are rooted. Let's see. Yeah.
And what I don't get is the transition.
Well, in this case,
information that who was closest together.
Yeah. Let's look at this for this. In this case, if you say, okay, let's turn this into an unrooted tree in such a way, this is important, normally we would just sort of remove this node, it would become a single lineage coming in there and you get this guy. But what I'm doing is to pull, uproot the tree, rip it out of the ground, and then the root ball will become a new species, and the tree will get, will be A, I'll get out of the way in a second, A, B, C, and D, D being the root ball. So yeah, it is a little confusing. Normally when we talk about unrooting a rooted tree, we don't include, the root goes away and that branch heals up and loses its internal fork. And that's what happened. This is the normal way of unrooting a tree. I'm doing a special kind of unrooting in which we include, we rip the thing out of the ground and include it.
I understand that. What I don't...
I see a real distaste on your face.
In the root case, we knew that A and B were more closely related
right.
than they were to C.
Yeah.
And when we make the transition to the unrooted, that information is no longer available.
It's no longer available as closer, more recently split. But what it is available as, that this branch partitions the tree into two sets of species. And in that sense, these two are closer. And also these two are closer. So it's, once we get an unrooted tree, that corresponds to this branch here. The topological structure is still there. It's just that you no longer think of it in a directional, time-oriented sense of saying these two are more recently related.
Which is often arbitrary anyway.
Well, if you don't know the rooting, then you're really talking about this guy. Well, or this guy. If you know the rooting, you've added some information by knowing it, and you're talking about this guy. And the number of these and the number of those are different. It's the number of these and the number of those that are the same. Actually, no past class has caught me on this point, so you're very, I congratulate you all. Yeah, in that sense, going unrooted this way is different from if I put a root in here, I actually add some information, and I have then an 8-rooted tree. There are more of those. And since there are a whole bunch of places I can put the root in, that's why there are more of them. Okay, so that's for unrooted. Let me move to the next case, which is multifurcations. And here what we're going to do is say, well, let's have a rooted tree. This is bifurcating. Here's one that has a five-way split here and a four-way split there. It's a multifurcating tree. There is the question, well, what does that mean? Does it mean there really was a four-way speciation instantaneously? Usually what it means is lack of information. But in any case, if there's lack of, and that's called the distinction between hard polytomies and soft polytomies. Hard polytomies are ones where you really know that in 1 year, in one generation, they split four ways, and basically you never know that. And soft polytomies are one which say, well, we can't tell what it is, so we're going to make them all split off at the same moment. Okay, this one has fewer branches and fewer interior nodes than that one. This one has 6 interior nodes. Each node you see here has a branch below it. Same with here. Each node you see has a branch below it, but it only has 2 interior nodes. Now, the counting algorithm I'm going to show you is the one I developed in 1978. which gets you the same number as Ernst Schroeder's generating functions did in 1870. Okay, so it says, suppose that we imagine ourselves doing the Cavalli-Sforza-Edwards addition sequence, but now we're going to allow you to add, to come off any one of the branches, or to come out of one of the interior nodes. You're adding a species, it could be adding, break a branch, make a new node, or it could be added into an existing existing bifurcation or multifurcation as an extra branch. Okay. Now when we do that, again, each sequence of additions generates a different tree. Every tree has exactly one such sequence of additions if you take the species in, say, alphabetical order. And you get an algorithm. It's actually very easy to carry out, very quick. Can be done by hand up to a moderate number of species. And what you do is you don't just count the number for two species, three species, four species, five species. You break it down according to how many interior nodes there are. If you have two tips, there is only one interior node. If you have three tips, there can be two interior nodes, as there were here. Or you could have a three-way split, which leaves you with only one interior node. So we're now allowing this kind of tree, which we didn't before, and that you break those down. Now, the algorithm I'm going to show you is that you take each of those, you consider take each of these numbers, and you consider all the ways you could add by breaking a branch, and all the ways you could add by coming off an existing interior node. If you come off an existing interior node, the number is added into this bin because there is the same number of interior nodes. If you break a branch and make a new interior node, it gets added to that bin. There's a form, you can write it down as a formula with subscripts, but it's this. So at the step going from 7 to 8 tips, when you're adding species H, if you start with a thing having one interior node and you add such as to just add an extra FERC to that interior node, you can only do that in one way and you get this number, which is 1. Or you can break any of the 8 branches, and that makes a new interior node and brings you down into this. So this number here is equal to this number times 8 and this number times 2, because there are 2 interior nodes, and if you add 2 of those interior nodes, come this way, it'll be 238 plus 8 is 246. So the formula is given in the book, but it's very easy to do. Just program a computer to have the number of interior, let's see if I get this right, the number of interior nodes be 9. No, sorry, number of branches be 9, because there's one below each tip and one below each interior node, 7 plus 2. So you have it know that it can break 9 branches, and then it puts the number into that category, or it can add to 2 interior nodes and put it into that category. So you just go down, taking each of these numbers and making a contribution to the 2 relevant bins, and you quickly come up with these numbers here. They're getting pretty big, but they're very fast. You could do this with a hand calculator. 660,032. This is for a case, you might say, well, how's that compared to the number of bifurcating cases? Well, it turns out the bifurcating cases are precisely the ones down this diagonal. So there's 135,000 of those, but there's 660,000 multifurcating trees, rooted multifurcating trees. And there are the numbers. And so you start out with 1, and this one was 3, but now it's 4. This one was 15, but now it's 26. This one was 105, but now it's 236. 105 is 236, and so on. So they're already bigger, and it's double. The number is double by the time you get to here. By the time you get down to 10, instead of 34,459,425, you get 282 million. So you're almost, you're not quite 10 times as many, but you're getting there. By the time you get down to 20, it's 8.87 times 10 to the 23rd. This was had an 8 in, the bifurcating one had an 8 in this position. The 8 is 100 times as many trees. Walter Fitch, trained as a biochemist, looked at that number when I got it. He was the editor and handled my paper. And he said, wow, we have a gram molecular weight of evolutionary trees. Okay. And the numbers go up, and you get down to 50, and we're up. The previous one was a 10 to the 70 or something, and this is 10 to the 81, and you go up even bigger. I mean, I could compute exactly down to about here with double precision arithmetic, and then it gets harder. Things like Mathematica will let you do infinitely long precision arithmetic. If you wish to write this out, which would have almost 200 digits, you could compute it, and it doesn't take that long for the program to do it. So there's a lot. Okay. Further, that's trees where we have labels on the tips, different labels on the tips, and none on the interior nodes. Long ago, people counted graphs that had labels on every node. That goes back to Arthur Cayley in 1854. And you might say, wait a second, how could Arthur Cayley have counted trees before Darwin? And the answer was he wasn't thinking of trees. He was thinking of ways you could put parentheses into expressions. And Cayley was an important English mathematician, very colorful. He trained at a time there were very few mathematical positions. He trained as a mathematician, but then he also took legal training because he knew he's probably not going to get a professorship. And he ended up as a solicitor in London doing a very specialized kind of commercial law called conveyancing. And it was great because he lived in the Inns of Court, which was this somewhat medievalish structure where all these fancy solicitors lived. And he would do his conveyancing in the morning and spend the afternoon on mathematics. And he published a lot of mathematical papers. He was very important in the development of matrix, of the operations we do on matrices. He was an important mathematician. There was another mathematician living in the Inns of Court doing the same thing. He trained as a mathematician, took legal training, ended up in the Inns of Court. And that's James Joseph Sylvester. And Cayley and Sylvester got to know each other. And they used to walk around the courtyard of the Inns of Court talking mathematics all day. Sylvester had the additional disadvantage of being Jewish, and a lot of the positions in England and even the training required that you declare your Christianity. He ended up, part of his training was done in Ireland in order to get around that. But Cayley and Sylvester developed a lot of matrix operations, matrix theorems, and published many papers. Cayley, and they both finally got professorships. They had just done such a major contribution to mathematics. Cayley published counting of graphs which had labels on the interior nodes. It's only the evolution case where you don't really have a name for these interior things. You're just trying to find out if they're there, but you don't necessarily have a named fossil for them. But what if you take off all the labels and just say, how many shapes of trees are there? Let me show you. I'll show you the result first, and I'll go back to the previous. With rooted bifurcating tree shapes, and this is where there aren't labels on the tips. There's one with two. There's only one with three. There are, of course, three different ways to put labels on those that result in different tree topology. There's two with four, there's three with five, there's six with six. You can see they're going up much more slowly, mostly because there's a lot of different ways you could put in the labels. How do you count them? A mathematician named Wedderburn in 1922 came up with this, and it was also a version of it was also in the College of Arts and Edwards paper, and it takes the number of those tree shapes and calls them S sub 1, so that S sub 1 is the number of tree shapes with one tip. S sub n is the number of tree shapes with n tips. And the way you do that is you say, well, let's look at the bottom split in the tree. And then say, well, it's a two-way split. And there are some number k of tips here. And there's some number n minus k of tips there. How many would there be with those two numbers? The answer is there's S sub k rooted trees with k tips and S sub n minus k rooted trees with n minus k tips. And so by choosing one of these and choosing one of those, you determine this tree. So the argument goes that you, for number n, let's say if n is odd, then one way would be to have a branch coming off that has only one tip, leading to only one tip on the left, and a branch coming off leading to n minus 1 on the right. Now, putting them in reverse order isn't different, you know, so you don't count that. So it's S1 times Sn minus 1 plus S2 times n minus 2 plus N3 times Sn minus 3, all the way up to the largest number you can get without having the left one subscript be bigger than the right one. That's for odd. For even, it's the same thing, but when you get up here, both have the same number of tips, and you have to worry about double counting. I'm not going to give you the exact rationale here. It doesn't take very long to figure it out, but it will turn out to be S of half of n times S of half of n plus 1 divided by 2. That's the number you start. So you add those up. Now, those are very easy to compute for the different n's.
Can you repeat what you said about the ordering part?
Well, if I have a split that leads to two tips on the left and n minus 2 on the right, do I also want to compute the case where there are n minus 2 on the left and 2 on the right? And the answer is no, because it'll be the same
shape.
Cases, you know, where, once again, the leftness and rightness is not biologically meaningful. Please.
Why do you need to split the tree into a bifurcating tree and do it the calculation separately for each side? Can't you just count the total number of tips and then use that equation, whether n is odd or even?
I mean, we got this equation by splitting. If you're not allowing me to split, where did I get the equation from?
No, I was wondering why you split it.
Well, first of all, I'm counting bifurcating. These are, by the way, rooted bifurcating trees. So this bottom split has to be a two-way split. And then I just want to consider, well, there's all kinds of rooted trees you could have on the one side and all kinds of rooted trees you could have on the other. So then I'm using my numbers I got for those smaller number of tips. And when I know them, I can just multiply them because we make a choice out of the number of possibilities here and a choice out of the number of possibilities there. The number of combinations we could do is the product. But you're asking some question, and I think it may be a different question.
So I think, as I understood it, you split the two, and then you do the calculation separately to simplify.
No, you've done the calculation. What we're saying here is, let's imagine we've done it up to n minus 1, and we've got those numbers. Can we use them to get the number for n? And that's what I'm doing. So once we go down to these smaller numbers, we just look up in the table the numbers we already computed. This is a method for getting the next number in the table from the previous number, and you can do it and right at the beginning, the very first number is just obvious, and then you just use this. So, okay. numbers you get. They're smaller than the numbers of tree topologies with the labels on. With the labels off, they go up much more slowly. Get up to 10, there's only 98 possible tree topology, tree shapes of a rooted bifurcating tree. There were 34 million tree topologies, but there's only 98 different tree shapes. And you can go on up. Get to 30, it's got up to a billion. It's got up to 1.4 billion. But so you can see it's going up much more slowly. Anyway, that's Wedderburn's calculation of how many shapes of trees there are. And I showed you pictures of them. And these are the numbers that are in the table 1, 1, 2, 3, 6. Okay. Beyond that, I didn't have the energy to draw them. There are further calculations you can do for unrooted bifurcating trees. You use the same argument of picking the alphabetically first tip and flipping the tree and rooting it in the ground, and then that, you know, gives you the same correspondence between rooted bifurcating shapes and unrooted bifurcating shapes for one more tip. And you remember it was 1, 1, 2, you know, whatever it was. I'm going the wrong way. It was 1, 1, 2, 3. And for this one, it's 1, 1, 2, and there will be 3 if we went on from that. It's the same unrooted rooted correspondence. You just shift the table by one. You can do that. You can also develop counting methods using something like I think it was using the argument that I gave, the table that I gave, that I did in 1978, will also count these guys. Here I tried very hard to find them all, and I did actually. Well, actually, this one is mislabeled. Something's wrong here. I'm looking at it. 2, 3. This should be 6. I've got 7. What's going wrong? I better go look at that and see whether two of these are equivalent. I just noticed that. I've been given this lecture many times. I've never noticed that there's 7 trees here and I say there's 6. That's pretty silly. I wonder what it says in the book. Okay. Anyway, you can do unrooted multifurcating tree shapes. Again, by the same argument of planting the tree. Okay. Now, there's one further case that I wanted to do. I won't quite get through it all. But it's very important in considering coalescence, ancestry of a single copy of genes in a population. So it's actually a case of importance. And it's something called not tree topologies, but labeled histories. And a labeled history looks like a tree topology. Let's say it's bifurcating and rooted. But we make a distinction between the order of the splits in time. So here are two trees that are the same tree topology, okay? But the left one, the first split that occurs in time is this one, and over here the first split that occurs in time is that one, and that makes it a different labeled history. And I'm going to show you a very easy way of counting these things next time. And it deals with the fact that if you start at the tips and go backwards, you can then ask which two lineages coalesce most recently. Here it's EC and here it's DF. These are different labeled histories, but the same tree topology. You can immediately see there's going to be more of these labeled histories than there are going to be tree topologies. I'll show you that. Next time, it's a real easy, quick. It's even easier than all these other arguments, and it gets you huge numbers, and that'll be the end and your merciful release from fun counting trees and getting hugely big numbers. The important thing being that they're huge. So we'll pick that up on Monday. Finish this topology stuff off. And we're then going into the issue of searching tree space and how does one do that.